Hey, it's the Pete here with episode 51 of the 666 Cast from website 666.com. And I'm also at thepete.com, hence my name, the Pete. Anyway, this is episode 51, as I mentioned. And man, oh man, it's what a world. I feel like that's been my attitude over the past couple of weeks of watching the news and stuff, trying to keep up with everything. And I actually made a mistake. That song you heard at the beginning just now, I played a couple weeks ago on the 666 Cast, and I knew I wanted to use it again, but I wasn't sure. I wanted to make sure I had the definition right, and it actually turns out I don't have it exactly right. That song is Odoru, Odoru Dame Ningen. It's from a couple of guys out of Japan called Kenji Otsuki and Fumihiko Kitsutaka. And I'm sure I'm screwing up the pronunciation there a little bit. And that song is actually off of one of many CDs from a wonderful series called NHK Niyokuso, or Welcome to the NHK, which is about a guy who is a shut-in, desperately doesn't want to believe he's a shut-in, but he is. But he believes that part of why it may be a shut-in is because the local network is conspiring to keep him inside, and that's the local television network, NHK. So that song that is called Odoru Dame Ningen, and the chorus there is Dame Ningen. And a couple weeks ago, I said Dame means stop, and Ningen means human, and so I sort of spun the entire episode around how humans need to stop. I actually was mistaken. I looked it up on jisho.org, which is a great English-Japanese dictionary. So dame really means no good, not serving its purpose, useless, broken, hopeless, wasted, in vain, purposeless, cannot, must not, not allowed. Still kind of fits, dame, I don't know quite why the song is called Odoru Dame Ningen, because I looked up Odoru, and Odoru means to dance, so, I don't know, I'm not sure, stop dance, or useless dancing man, I don't know, but Ningen is human, is person, basically, so, or humans, yeah, So anyway, yeah, lots of things that humans need to be stopping this week. For the first 15, I wanted to go over some of the news that I've been trying to blog about. The past couple weeks have been really hectic in my personal life, family visiting and lots of events, and still trying to keep up with studying Japanese, blah, 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 blah. Had a giant argument with a family member who shall remain nameless. About Japan and how radioactive it may or may not be. Oh my God, there's so much ignorance and fear going around, I swear to God. Not that there shouldn't be concern, because it's obvious, the Japanese are just like us, they're humans, they can make mistakes, they can be corrupted, just like the rest of us. And so it's absurd to think that anything else could be the case. But, there just isn't there. This is what I told the concerned family member. There just isn't enough evidence to suggest that there's malfeasance going on. As I've said, I think, in previous 666 casts, there just isn't. There may be a reason for that. This is actually something I blogged about on website 666. You can just head over there and check it out, but I will give you the nutshell. Apparently, TEPCO is one of many companies, or one of the biggest companies that advertises in the media. And apparently, there's like sort of a conglomerate of advertisers, and they can threaten to just sort of yank advertising funds away from the media. Well, if you don't report on things the way, we want you to, we can yank the money from you, and you can just, figure out where you're going to pay your employees some other way. That's actually what Jake Adelstein, he's an investigative reporter, American living in Japan. He wrote a book called Tokyo Vice, I think it is. And he was on The Daily Show, and he seemed really cool and stuff. And anyway, so that was a post from him over at JapanSubculture.com, which is a very interesting blog. Should definitely check it out if you're at all interested in Japanese subculture. Anyway, so that was his sort of take on it. But it sort of points out to me, isn't that how all media works, or most media works around the world? I mean, isn't every magazine and news show subsidized by advertising? You know, it's not like I pay, you know, CBS for 60 minutes. You know, I don't pay CNN for Anderson Cooper 360. You know, I suppose indirectly I pay a little bit because of cable, only I don't have cable. This is all hypothetical. You know what I mean. So it sort of says to me, hey, this is kind of a fucked up, problematic way to go because, I mean, on a systemic level, this is how it works. You know, you're less likely to report on a parent company or a sponsor, you know, if, you know, they do something bad, you know what I mean? So I remember reading or seeing ABC back before they were owned by Disney. ABC back in like the 80s, I think I still have this video floating around. I should dig it out. Did a story on how Epcot was its own little government, or rather the whole Disney Foundation, Disney area, not foundation, but Disney area down in Florida was their own government. They had gotten their own government from the state of Florida and could pass their own laws and stuff. And they were basically a corporate, you know, chunk of land. And they weren't, this wasn't exactly what, you know, Walt Disney had wanted. And so they pressed him on it, and it was this big thing. And, you know, and when's the last time you heard anything critical about Disney in the news? You know, I mean, for decades, basically. And, you know, maybe it's because ABC is owned by Disney, you know? So, or maybe it's because Disney advertises via all sorts of media, and if they threaten, if they pull their advertising, you know, they won't, the media companies won't be able to afford to survive, maybe? I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. It's systemic, it seems to me. More fun in the news. Let's see, an interesting quote from David Petraeus from 1987. This is you've heard this guy's name. He's a military guy. I forget his specific bona fides, but he was involved in the Iraq War and Afghanistan and stuff. Anyway, so here's a quote from his Princeton PhD dissertation, I guess, which was blogged on Adam Weinstein's blog. AdamHeinstein.tumblr.com. It's a quote, and here's the quote. And while observing the Soviet difficulties in Afghanistan with a certain sense of vindication, the U.S. military are at the same time reminded of the difficulties of defeating a determined guerrilla opponent who enjoys sanctuaries and is fighting in rugged terrain. After all, if a country with relatively few public opinion concerns or moral compunctions about its tactics cannot beat a bunch of ill-equipped Afghan tribesmen, what does that say about the ability of the United States, with its domestic constraints, statutory limitations, moral inhibition, and zealous investigative reporters, to carry out a successful action against a guerrilla force? Interesting, since he just described what's going on now. Because we don't have a moral compunction about torture and killing anymore. We don't have domestic constraints. If the last 10 years or the 8 years of the Bush administration taught us anything, we have no domestic constraints. Statutory limitations, moral inhibitions, these are all gone. Zealous investigative reporters, I'm not sure we ever had this. We had this for a while, and I think there are more exceptions what am I trying to say? Instead of, I think there are singular examples of zealous investigative reporters throughout American history. You know, it's not like every reporter, you can't, you know, point to most reporters and say, yeah, they're good, solid reporters, and they go out and hunt down the good stories. They absolutely don't. Nobody does. Nobody does anymore. So I feel like he's describing us now from 1987. Anyway, so that was interesting. Blogged about that. Found that, as I said, at adamweinstein.tumblr.com. Good, good little blog there. I'm going to skip over some of this, but you, so you should definitely check out the website, 666.com, and read up on this. Oh, yeah, NPR journalists organized their listeners to oppose an undemocratic device in the U.S. Senate. This was cool. Found this, via Jay Rosen on Twitter, jrosen_.nyu. Basically, this is a post, or this is from an article at wnyc.org, and it starts, on December 22nd, in the face of seemingly unanimous bipartisan support, the Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act, Bill S-372, was killed in the final moments of the last legislative session when a mystery senator placed what's called a secret hold on the bill. This bill had already been passed by the House and the Senate, but in the final vote on the reconciled bill, it died and no one had to take responsibility. Why do we care? Because Bill S-372 is designed to protect government workers from being punished, as they usually are, for exposing illegality, waste, and corruption. It was wildly popular in public, but a legislator or legislators were able to kill it by using an undemocratic device to hide from their constituents. So, yeah, that's pretty fucked up. And Obama said this was supposed to be the most transparent government yet. Doesn't seem so at this point. They did, by using the NPR managed to figure or to narrow it down to two senators, apparently. So they were able to do that by with the help of their NPR listeners, apparently, which is kind of cool. Not that it really matters, because we're basically fucked. You know, I mean, this is what, you know, I sort of get at by using the Dame Ningen chorus to open the podcast, the 666 cast, because, you know, at this point, things are just kind of done, you know. I'm getting into the topic I wanted to talk about in the second 15 today, a little early, but might as well. You know, it's like we're kind of done at this point. We don't have the power. We don't have the lobbying power of TEPCO. You know, we can't threaten to pull our advertising from media corporations or the government. You know, we need the government. You know, we need the media. We need there's a reason these bodies exist. It's because they're needed. You know, because we need infrastructure. Human society needs infrastructure. Human society needs, you know, which the government provides. We need a general level of defense against foreign enemies, which the government provides, well, in theory. And, you know, we need to know what the government is doing to make sure that they're not taking advantage of us or misspending our money or doing things we don't like. That's what the media is for. These are things we need. But at this point, it's obvious that capitalism cannot give them to us. Our government has pissed every tax dollar they get, almost every dollar they get, down their leg. We don't invest in science, education, or health. We invest in war, you know, and I don't understand this. And I don't understand why, you know, people aren't screaming bloody murder about this, because the imbalance is so obvious if you just look at it. I mean, do the math, people. The math. How many people die of disease, famine, poverty? Infinitely more, dude, than terrorism. You know, in this during the Cold War, when we were convinced we were all going to die in a nuclear fireball because, you know, America wasn't going to back down and neither was the Soviet Union, we had more rights and better health care than we do now. Less expensive health care. You know, now corporations run amok. They can fucking sue, or not sue, but they want to fight our ability to sue them. You know, even though the reality is, at least this is my understanding, I could be mistaken. This is not meant as a factual statement, but this is meant to represent my general understanding of things. Is that it's not my understanding that frivolous lawsuits are that incredibly common. And frankly, I'd rather deal with the frivolous lawsuits to make sure that people who have legitimate concerns can have their day in court. As someone who did not have his day in court himself once, I speak from knowledge. And, you know, and the way that the way we're all, things are so lopsided these days, you know, whether it's something that, what happened to me was I got sued by a collection agency and they didn't have to prove that I owed them anything. They just showed up in court, and because I didn't know how to file an opposition, couldn't afford a lawyer, they won. And I even spoke directly to the judge and explained my situation, and he's like, well, can't help you. I mean, it's just like, what? Wait a minute, what? So the government favors business on all levels. You know, you can see it by looking at the lobbyists in Washington on the federal level, and you can see it on the local level by what happened to me. You know, a corporation can pick your name out of a fucking phone book and sue you. And if you're poor, if you don't know what you're doing, if you don't have a lawyer, you know, you're done. You lose, you know. So anyway, you know, so then we jump back into the big scheme of things. Oh, and now we're at 15 or 16 and a half. We jump back into the big picture here, and you know, I see a whole new sort of strata in clear light, clear picture, clear view. That's the phrase. And I realize that this is, or I feel like this is, you know, it's sort of like walking on a building or you know, here in New York, we've got these giant skyscrapers. And when you're inside, you have no concept of how big they are. You're just sort of lost in them. You know, I've temped and I've worked in offices where you're just sort of in them. And it's like you don't have a concept of how big the building is, because it's like it's an entire, you know, maybe not an entire square block, but it takes up like a third of a square block, which is huge, huge. Blocks are pretty wide in New York. And so that's, you know, that's a lot of space. And these things are giant. You just don't really understand when you're in there what it involves. I mean, sure, okay, there's the elevator and the stairwell and the floors, but there's also like the air ducts and the plumbing and the electricity and all these other conduits running all over the place. And you don't even see them. And I sort of feel like that's what's going on right now, or that's what's been going on for who the hell knows how long, I don't know. But my feeling is that we have a class structure. Because I was thinking about this, it's like, you know, the rich can have whatever they want. I mean, it's like, if you're an executive at a corporation, you're like superhuman. Yeah, I mean, you may not be able to fly or shoot lasers out of your eyes or anything, but because of your money, you are superhuman. And it's like, to me, we need to recognize that. We need to see that there is this massive imbalance of power and ability to communicate. You know, there's, who's that guy? That's just going to, I have to look this up now because there's this guy at the U.S. Navy College. I know I've talked about him before. I'm just going to quick look him up here. Let me pause this and I will come back. Okay, here we go. Thomas P.M. Barnett. He is a guy who was at the U.S. Naval College back in, well, I think he's still there. He wrote a book called The Pentagon's New Map, and it was based around this seminar that he would give, or this brief he would give. I think they called it The Brief, and they ran it on NPR a couple, or not NPR, C-SPAN a couple times. I managed to record it once. It's an amazing thing, and it talks about... Well, essentially, it came back in the pre-Y2K days. The government, the U.S. government, I believe, this is the story anyway, they came to him and said, okay, we want you to tell us what's going to happen with Y2K. Cross the board. Look at the entire planet. How is this going to hit us? And so he started digging, he started learning, he started reading, and seeing how things worked. And he started seeing the system, and he discovered that... I don't remember specifically if he discovered Y2K would be a joke or not, but he basically came up with this interesting analysis on how Earth's culture works as a whole. Basically, and I'm paraphrasing, these aren't the terms he used, but basically there's the haves and the have-nots and have-nots, and he calls the have-nots, or the haves, rather, the core. And then there's the gap. And the gap is where most of the violence comes from. And one of the interesting coincidences as far as what the gap is versus what the core is that the gap doesn't have connectivity. So the core has a voice. There's communications. People have phones. People have internet. People have a way to speak their minds. And the gap, they're not so connected. And that's where all the violence comes from. That's where terrorism comes from. And so I thought that was a very interesting take. And so to shift this to what I'm talking about, this class thing, you know, it's like, you know, we are given the illusion that we have a voice. You're listening to me, Mr. The Peak, just dude on the web. You're listening to me, but I'm not Glenn Beck. I can't hold a rally. I can't, you know, I'm just a guy with a podcast. That's it, you know, and I don't marshal the will of millions, you know, or even thousands or hundreds of thousands, like, you know, Beck. You know, so I can't affect things. I can only affect a few people at a time. I can, you know, you're listening to this, which is awesome, and I really appreciate it. And hopefully what I'm saying will make you think, or will encourage you to think and do some reading, do more reading and more thinking about it on your own and decide how you feel about this stuff and get you hopefully interested in being more aware of this stuff. But I can, like I said, I can only do things on a small scale. I'm not superhuman. If I'm Rupert Murdoch, I can commission an entire television show, an entire television series. I can make movies. I can, you know, I can have an entire channel dedicated to this stuff if I'm Rupert Murdoch, but I'm not. I'm just me. I'm a guy. He was, you know, he made all the right choices to make money. You know, I've got different interests. But in the great scheme of things, shouldn't we all have a voice? Well, we're losing that voice as individuals, as regular citizens. And corporations, their members, their executives, are the superhumans. They're able to have much louder voices than us. See what's going on? See, I'm trying to sort of repaint our perception of reality here a little bit, because this is how things seem to be working. Okay, so you get these superhumans who can just speak with a whisper and, you know, and deafen millions, you know, I mean, not literally deafen, but you know what I mean. And it's like, so you've got this situation where these guys are up top. Now, what I'd like to do is, you know, sort of create some layers here, get a little bit more specific with the layers. You've got these rich guys, you've got the super wealthy, and then the next level down, you've got this sort of really tiny and ever shrinking sliver of middle class. And these are the people who are most lied to, I guess. Nobody even talks to the poor folks. Nobody talks to the next level down. But the tiny sliver of the ever more tiny sliver of middle class, people still believe they can have a piece of that pie on top, you know? And that's the problem here, is that there's this myth, you know, where that everyone can have everything. You can have it all in the off-world colonies. No. You know what I mean? It's like we have this idea that we can, you know, it's like, didn't you guys see Fight Club? Come on. We can't all be handsome, beautiful, rich. You know, somebody's got to be poor, right? At least in our society. You know, we're not all, we actually are magical snowflakes. I really do believe that. but you know what I'm saying here? It's that, like, the way our society is ordered, we can't all be at the top. You know, because all the money that's at the top comes from below, you know, and it's like, actually in The Key, my novel series, which I'm going to be publishing for Kindle soon. So watch for that on my website, on thepeak.com. And I should mention on a website 666, because it's very much an alternate thinking kind of novel series. In that book series, there's a point at which I point out, there's a saying on the dollar, e pluribus unum, right? From many to, well, if you look at the Latin, it says from many one. That's what a lot of people translate it to. But when I was looking at it, I was sort of thinking, couldn't I translate that to mean from many to one, right? So in other words, this is how our economy works. It's like the rich people get all the money because all of us at the bottom or in the middle, we spend our money on their shit that they make for us, right? So George Clooney is crazy rich because so many of us have gone to see his movies. You follow me? So all the money is rising up. We will never be rich. We will never have, you know, that kind of wealth. I mean, yeah, there are the exceptions. Those of us who get lucky will get there. But, you know, the majority of us will be struggling. So how does this jibe with all men are created equal? Well, it doesn't. It doesn't. It's like all men are born equal. And that's where all bets are off. And I've said that a bunch of times before on the 666 cast. You know. So what I'd like to do is color code. I'd like to color code this class system, right? So we got the rich at the top. We got the middle class, the ever-tinying middle class, which are being lied to. And then the poverty, the poor folks, the people at the bottom, right? And that number, the number of those people is growing rapidly. I mean, it's sort of, you know, the ceiling on that level is also growing a little bit. But generally speaking, you know, we're all getting poorer, you know, because of inflation, because of prices rising, which are effectively just another side of the same inflation coin. But anyway, so let's color code this, right? So let's start at the bottom. Let's say the bottom, since it's all workers, let's say they're like Browns, right? Like Mexicans, right? The sort of working class, right? Working in the service sector and the food services and the janitorial and all these things. And this is where I see Mexicans. And I'm not, this isn't racism. This is me walking around New York and Los Angeles over the past, you know, 15, 20 years and just looking. Okay. This is a class thing. This is exactly what I'm talking about, but this isn't a race thing. Okay. So we'll call them the Browns. And then we got the middle, which is black because they're the ones lied to. Yes, you can be free, right? And then the top is white, the white people at the top, right? So, but keep in mind, these color codes have nothing to do with race, right? This is strictly about mentality, how you think about things. You can be a black guy and be white, right? You can be a Mexican and be black, right? So it's not about race. I'm just color coding here. Yes, I'm doing it for humorous effect, but you get the point, you know? So if you're a white person, you know, if you're a white person in this system, in my system, you're rich, you're oblivious to the pain you cause, you own a nice house. So George Clooney in this scenario wouldn't actually be white. He might be economically white, but emotionally, morally, he doesn't fit because this system doesn't describe morals, you know? It's because morals to me are separate. You can be moral and be in any of the classes, but actually, no, that's not true. You can't be, or you can't be in the top class. You can't be white and moral because that's just not how white people think, you know? And again, I'm not talking about race. You've got that. That's the whole point of this, is that you've got to sort of rethink your colors. So when you're walking down the street and you see some homeless guy who happens to be Caucasian, he's not white. Because 5 feet away from him is a white guy in a business suit who might not actually be Caucasian. Could be Asian, could be Mexican. The richest man on the planet is a Mexican. So, you know, so this isn't a race thing at all. This is strictly, you know, about applying the classes. It's recognizing these classes. And that's what That's to me something that I think the media is completely letting us down on. There is this massive divide between the haves and the have-somes and the have-nots, and it's really fucking scary. And it completely goes against everything our country was supposed to be founded on. Excuse me as I burp. Excuse me. And I don't know what to do. I don't know how we're supposed to deal with this, because, you know, I just don't know. I mean, I don't know how this is supposed to change. The corporations are so powerful. The government is so corrupt. You know, I mean, I had a conversation with my mom the other day or yesterday about how, oh gosh, we should, you know, be more forgiving of Obama because, you know, he has no choice. It's like, what? If he has no choice, what does that say for the rest of us? If the president of the United States cannot give us universal health care, if the president of the United States can't stop spending money on wars, what does that say about the rest of us? The president is the closest thing to a superhero we've got on this planet. He's the closest thing to Captain America or Superman or you know, anybody who's supposed to be patriotic, is supposed to be doing the right thing for America. And he doesn't do it. He hasn't shut down Guantanamo. He's letting terrorists get, or alleged terrorists get tried in military courts, which are by nature unfair. Innocent, or you're guilty until proven innocent. I mean, it's absurd. It's absolutely absurd. I'd say it's over, but it's not. We're still here. We're still alive. And I feel like there is hope, but I don't know where to look for it. I don't know where to go for it. I don't know what to do for it. It just, you know, I just don't know. So on that happy note, I'm going to wrap this up because we passed 30 minutes a few minutes ago here, or a minute and a half ago. But I will say thank you very much for listening. Quick shout out to The New Meat. Thank you for correcting me. The Smedley Darlington Butler book that I was referring to a couple of podcasts ago, a couple of triple sixes ago, was War is a Racket, not Capitalism is a Racket. Duh, that doesn't make any sense. Capitalism is a racket. So, is a racket. Of course it's a racket. That's the definition of it's money making. Anyway, so thank you, The New Meat on Twitter, for correcting me. I apologize for getting that wrong. So you can Google for that book because I think it's in the public domain. But you should definitely check that out. War is a Racket by Smedley Butler. I talked about him before, but you should also check him out on Wikipedia to read more about that guy. I think they should seriously make a movie about that guy. He was in a way a true American superhero. He was pretty awesome. I mean, he started out corrupt, but he came to his senses towards the end and did some pretty neat things, and he claims averted a coup, so an American coup, a coup in the American government. So yeah, read more about him. All right, thank you for listening. Please let me know what you think. You can @reply me on Twitter @ThePete or follow this podcast on website 666 on Twitter @website 666 on Twitter. And let me know what you think via there as well. But all the blogs, headlines, all the website 666.com show up there on Twitter. I also will retweet some of it on the Pete stream, but not too often on Twitter. But thank you very much for listening. And hope you enjoyed this week's episode and new episodes for the foreseeable future. I had to do a special edition last week, which I recorded weeks ago, but long before the earthquake even. So if it seemed oddly out of place, my apologies. But hopefully it was interesting. I thought so. Anyway, thanks again. See you in a week's time. I should come up with like a good sign off as opposed to just going back to the Donna music, but. In lieu of a good sign-off quote phrasey thing, I will just go ahead and go back to the music. So here it is. Whoops. Where is it? Where'd it go? Oh, I turned off the speakers. Hello. There we go. Thanks for listening. Useless human. Cool.